trying to figure out Elijah's theme, The Doors. They got shown the door. They left.
This one's kind of random.
Day. I don't know. This is just no
this
theme.
One's no necessarily theme for this one. Just been on a big Doors kick.
Okay.
Let's see. Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that. We bring in John Glennon.
I know the library pretty well.
Oh, I do too.
Yeah.
Do too.
You can go pretty deep.
I can go really deep.
I discovered the Doors when I was a sophomore in high school.
Did you?
And I was on a huge Doors kick for like that entire season, the entire year.
Yep. John, there's no way to segue from that.
Hi, John.
I'm just going to say
open
hello.
Open the door to John Glennon.
Yeah, there we go. Look
well
at
done.
That.
Well
Nicely
done.
Nicely done. Here, you want to come host this?
Sure, I'm in.
So there's a lot. I know John Robinson's down in Mobile, but I'm not envious of his job this offseason. Something we've been talking about a lot in the last couple of days. Let's start with everybody knows the big two that are of importance. But I'm going to ask you, who's three on your list? If you're addressing their moves in the offseason and who they need to keep and who they're not going to be able to keep, we know Henry and Tannehill are 1 and 1A in no particular order. Depends on who you talk to. Who's next, in your opinion, that they got to get done?
In my opinion, it's Jack Conklin, you know, and I probably wouldn't have said that at the start of the year or maybe even, you know, partially through the year. But I think the way Jack Conklin finished, I think he is maybe not quite back up to his all-pro form of, the rookie season and part of his second year. But he's a pretty strong right tackle right now. And the way this team is built right now, you know, assuming Derrick Henry comes back, I think the way that offensive line was playing and opening holes for Derrick Henry, if you can bring Jack Conklin back and, get that chemistry working again, I think that's a huge step in the right direction. And in terms of sacks as well, we saw so much improvement in Jack Conklin's game. And, you know, I think it would be, more difficult, in my opinion, to kind of find a plug-and-play right tackle, you know, put someone right into Jack Conklin's position than it would be Logan Ryan, who is number four in my book in terms of getting re-signed. I think they're a little bit deeper, probably a cornerback. If you consider Malcolm Butler's coming back, Adoree Jackson's coming back, they've got some depth guys. You know, if you draft another young corner, I think you're probably in decent position there. So as much as I think the Titans would benefit certainly from Logan Ryan coming back as well, my mind, I think Jack Conklin is just a bit higher on the priority list.
So unfortunately, and I know it's always a gamble, it looks like they're going to go one for one in the gambles. Mariota was the right decision, but if they keep Conklin, it was going to be the gamble that didn't pay off, right, because they're going to have to pay a lot more.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to blame them, you know, because at the time they had to make the decision about whether or not to pick up the option year on Jack Conklin's contract. He wasn't at the top of his game last year. I think he was still kind of feeling his way back from the injury still and still getting used to the zone scheme. I think he was much more of a kind of a gap scheme sort of blocker. So it would have been about $12.9 million had they picked up the option last year. Now they're probably looking at something more in the average of about $16 million perhaps on Jack Conklin. So
oh,
it's come up a little bit.
It's 12. I thought it was less than that. I didn't know it was that much. I thought it was below 10. No.
I could go back and check.
I could be wrong.
I think it was double digits.
Was it?
Yeah,
okay.
I think we're in the neighborhood here.
I thought it was
double
a little digits, bit under so. 10. Okay.
But certainly, yeah, he's going to come out better. As a result of not having that contract or not having that option year picked up.
Do you believe John Robinson's going to have to go to certain players? Not that he's looking to get rid of them, but do you think because of what we're talking about, he's going to have to ask a player or two to maybe restructure, in your opinion?
Certainly possible because, you know, the more you look at it, the more you see a lot of needs this offseason. Not a lot of needs, but a lot of business that has to be taken care of. And if you're hopeful of trying to bring back, you know, the big four of Tannehill, Henry, Conklin, and Logan Ryan, it's not completely out of the question. You know, the Titans have probably $55 to $60 million under the projected cap right now, and you know, you could probably look at some of the veteran guys that may not be part of the future and say these guys may be gone. You know, maybe it's a Deion Lewis, maybe even a Delanie Walker, and save some money there. But still, that's a lot of money if you're trying to bring all four of those guys back. And then if you're trying to add, you know, the top priority probably, and whether it's draft or free agency, is an edge rusher. Those guys don't come cheap, clearly. And so if you want to add someone there, you're going to have to pay some money in free agency probably. So it's certainly possible that they may have to ask some guys to restructure, and certainly possible that some of these veterans that maybe still have a year or two left on their contract won't be back next year.
You know, they've done a good job of filling gaps, because there's been many off seasons we're sitting here going, where the heck do they start? I mean, there's so many holes to fill. Where do they even begin when free agency period starts? That is not the case today. It's much, much, much lesser. So it's more almost opinion-based. I mean, it's like last year we knew they're going to go out and try to get you know, an offensive lineman. They went out and they landed Saffold. But when you look around, to what if you were to sit here in late January, guess where John Robinson starts? What position do you think he starts to address first in free agency?
I think their biggest need, whether that's free agency or the draft, has to be, you know, an edge rusher, someone to bring more pressure on the quarterback on a regular basis. You know, they've got some guys who can do that. Certainly, Harold Landry had his share of sacks last year, and actually Kamale Correa really came on towards the end of the year as well. But, you know, I think in that game against Kansas City, when we saw Patrick Mahomes back there running around for 2, 3, 4, 5 seconds or more sometimes, and granted, Patrick Mahomes has done that to a lot of teams, but it really illustrated to me the fact that this team has to have more of a presence out there, and I think that has to be the number one priority. But you're right, you know, there aren't a glaring handful of needs that need to be addressed. I don't think John Robinson needs to spend as much money this year, fortunately, as he did last year in free agency. And you know, I kind of wrote about this at the end of the year too, after the loss to Kansas City. Well, how much, you know, more optimism I think is there to this Titans team than we've seen in a long time. You know, when you can potentially bring back an offense that was averaging 30 points a game for the last 10 games of the regular season, who can remember anything like that for the Titans? So yeah, to me, I think there's a better feel going into this offseason about the Titans than I can remember in a good long time.
Talking to John Glennon from The Athletic. And John, last night on Inside the NFL, and I know this was circulated a lot on the social media channels, there was a nice moment captured by NFL Films with Marcus Mariota congratulating Ryan Tannehill on the job he's done. The way he handled himself after the game, you know, it's clear with every single person, whether it's the media that's covering him, the coaching staff, and on around his teammates, they have all said the highest things about Marcus Mariota, and this is pretty much the end. It's not going to happen here. And so I think this is one of the great examples of a guy kind of riding off on the white horse, even though he didn't do what everybody hoped he would do. It's a really strange thing in that regard.
It really is, yeah. You know, he's pretty unique in that regard, I would say, in that he was picked to be a franchise quarterback to completely, you know, take this team to the next level and lead it for, you know, maybe a decade or so. And yeah, we're not going to see that happen. But yeah, I think if there's anybody in Nashville that's not pulling for Marcus Mariota to succeed elsewhere, I'd be surprised. You know, I think everybody wants him to have a Ryan Tannehill story where he goes somewhere next year and maybe without the pressure of being that franchise guy, without being that former first-round pick, the cornerstone, maybe that helps helps him succeed elsewhere just as it did for Ryan Tannehill, and the things he learned maybe by watching for 10 games or so, maybe that helps him as well. But certainly we missed, and certainly even though he didn't take this team, you know, to the conference championship, as Tannehill did. You know, I think he did play a significant part, certainly in turning this franchise around. You know, a franchise that had gone through the 3-13 season. You know, his first year around here, if I'm remembering correctly, and then to have gone 9-7 for a number of years. You know, the Titans are one of very few teams that put together four straight seasons over 500, and Marcus Mariota had a lot to do with that, you know, certainly both with his play and with his leadership. And just, you know, the word that continually pops up for Marcus Mariota is just class. You know, there was never a letdown for Marcus Mariota in that department, just as classy a guy as you could possibly find, never bitter about his situation, certainly not openly, publicly bitter, I should say, and just remained a leader and a friend to his teammates.
John, we're going to continue to talk about the quarterback position for this Titans team until there is a starting quarterback under contract, because right now there isn't. Logan Woodside's it. So the debate is going to be had. Should the Titans re-sign Ryan Tannehill, or do they take a run at somebody like Tom Brady? We've had a big conversation on the show of, would you rather have Tom Brady for a year or Tannehill for multiple years? And I think it's a mixed bag. Where do you stand on that?
I think I'd probably have to go with the Tannehill camp, honestly. You know, that may get you some crazy looks. National fan, you'd rather have Ryan Tannehill than Tom Brady. But I think you have to look at the stages, obviously, of their career. Their ages, you know, Tom Brady is 43, you know, injured more now than he has certainly been in the past, less effective now than he was in the past, even though you can certainly make the argument that he didn't have much of a cast of receivers around him. We understand that. But, you know, I like what Ryan Tannehill did last year, and this was not a small sample size for Ryan Tannehill. This was not like he came in for a couple games at the end of the year that were meaningless, had some good stats, and you wonder, hey, maybe we'll give this guy a chance. This was 10 regular season games, as I mentioned, averaging over 30 points, you know, taking a team to the conference championship, even though they didn't pass as much in the playoffs. I think that was not because of Tannehill's poor performance in any way, shape, or form. You know, he's 31 years old. He clearly is a good fit for this scheme, I think. Diving in with Tannehill, whether it's just for if you can't work out something long-term immediately, you can still franchise him, give him another year to say, hey, what can you do that again? Or, you know, or are you the one-year wonder? And then move on after that. I'm just not sold on signing Brady. Again, the age, the injury situation, you know, and I'm not sure. You know, we all make a big deal out of the Brady-Vrabel relationship, and certainly that's big. But if you're Tom Brady and you're used to playing in Boston in a big market all these years, and you've got a wife who's a supermodel and used to the big city life, do the Brady family, do the Bradys really want to come to little old Nashville? I don't know if that would be the case either. So certainly that's, you know, it's not a lock that Tom Brady would want to come here. Do you really want to roll the dice there?
John, as Mike Vrabel goes through the process of hiring a new defensive coordinator, you know, one thing that I thought was beneficial to him and why Dean Pease was his first call was having that veteran that he can lean on as he is a young head coach. Do you think he continues down that path and tries to get an established guy that he can, you know, pick the brain of, or does he, you know, do a situation like he was in where you get an up-and-comer and give them a shot to run the defense?
I think there's still a need for a veteran in that department because not only is Mike Vrabel still a fairly young head coach, but really the defensive assistants, there's not a lot of experience on that side of the ball when you look at the defensive coaches. So I think you're looking for a veteran again, someone who runs a scheme similar to what Dean Pease did. You know, obviously the two veteran names probably that come to mind first are Wade Phillips and Romeo Crennel. I'm not sure if you want to go down that path. I don't mean to be the ageist guy, but, you know, they're both 70-plus in years, and at some point, I think the Titans want to get away from having a defensive coordinator who is always going to be a year or two away from retirement as they've had with Dick LeBeau and Dean Pease here. So I do think there is going to be some seasoning required. I don't think he's going to have an up-and-comer, just my belief. But we'll see. That certainly is some mighty big shoes to fill.
John, we did this yesterday when we talked with Jim Wyatt. I'd rather do this at the end because, you know, I didn't want to start off on a very somber note. But obviously you spent a great deal of your career and time not only in this market but at the Tennessean, and you worked alongside David Clymer. We were all saddened to hear the news on Sunday, and so I know he meant a lot to you as well.
Yeah, he sure did, you know, both from personal and professional standpoint. You know, you want to talk about a guy who was the voice of not only one generation, but probably two, three generations around here when you go back to think that, you know, he started working at the Tennessean, at least in a part-time role in 1974, and it wasn't too long before he became a columnist. And, you know, let's remember, too, that back in those days, there was not obviously the Internet. There were not all kinds of voices that would be heard in terms of sports opinion. So columnists like, you know, David Clymer or Joe Biddle or Larry Woody with the Tennessean, who had those longtime runs, those were what the people saw almost every single day on a regular basis. They were the shapers of opinion in the mid-state and beyond. And David Clymer was certainly one of the best in that regard. You know, I think he would probably be happy that a lot of people considered him at times to be a little curmudgeonly because he was anything but a soft touch on teams or players or coaches. You know, he held everyone accountable in a good way. And just in the Tennessean itself, the way he mentored, again, not just one generation of sports writers, but two, three, four, you know, everybody always, you know, went to David when they had a question or, you know, wanted to figure out how to do something that they had never done before in the reporting field. We'll ask David. He's probably done that before. He knows who to talk to. So, yeah, just a tremendous loss. And you know, I think on Friday when his services held, we're going to see an awful lot of people whose lives David Clymer impacted over the years.
No doubt. Well said. By the way, we had a really, really good interview with Jeff Perlman yesterday on the show. If you haven't heard his podcast with David Clymer done about 3 weeks ago, you ought to go check it out. So thanks for doing this, John.
Sure. Appreciate you guys having me.
John Glennon from The Athletic. Always good to talk to him. We will come back with a lot more of Darren Donick and Chase next.